Here comes Breaking the Panel this week. We've got your weekly allowance of nerd world problems at your home for full frontal nerdity. Charles and Ibbot are out for the week on a date night, and the kids are alone, ready to play with the matches.
Wait, kids!
Travis
Jones! That's right, boys and girls. The Blazing Defenders in the house are about to burn this mother down. Hey.
The more you know.
The comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk. Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
All right, on this week's episode of Breaking the Panel, you're not going to hear Charles, you're not going to hear Ibbot, which could be good, which it could be bad. The show could stay on the rails, or it could come the F off. We'll see what Travis allows us to do.
That's all right. Soapbox Klotz is here to keep us on the rails, I think. Maybe I'll take a nap.
Right. Got to have the straight guy. Always got to have the straight guy in the group.
That's me. I don't know what you guys are doing. I'm the straight guy.
Yeah, I think that. Guy's got jokes.
All right, this week we've got some stories about DC. We've got some interesting news about Iron Fist. And Kevin Smith, of course, has to make an appearance.
Great.
Yes. Obligated there, Chris.
This is like the only comic book show that doesn't refer to Kevin Smith like every day. I think we probably owe somebody money by not doing it. We're not meeting our quota.
Meh.
Did you just meh?
Yeah.
Nope. Meh. No beard love? Come on.
Meh.
Casey. Oh, I got mad beard love. Mad beard love. I just, you know what I hate? And I like Kevin.
Right.
I like Kevin Smith. I think he's great. He's one of us. He's a nerd. But how many times can a guy cry during the Flash? I mean, he cries every episode during the Flash. Well, I'm wondering about the guy.
You know what, Travis? If you would cry a little bit more during the Flash, maybe you'd be directing an episode. I'm just putting it out there. I'm just saying.
Or I could have made Geely. me crying, making Geely. I don't know. Maybe the same thing.
He didn't make Geely.
He didn't?
No. He made Jersey Girl. Get it straight.
Oh, that's what it was. Geely, Jersey. That was
Affleck
like the sequel.
Was the bomb,
Geely was like
fantasy.
The sequel of Jersey Girl, right? Jeez. Clerks 2. I mean.
Whoa. Easy what? On the Clerks 2.
What? No, I'll go see it. He take my money, Kevin. I mean, take my money. I've loved everything he's done.
All right, so we'll go ahead and lead with some Moose Jaws then. So Kevin Smith's been doing his True North trilogy. It's based on podcasts. It started off with Tusk, which was based on a podcast he had done with his good buddy Scott Mosier over on the Smodcast podcast. He's doing these films.
Nice job, Chris. Hey, plug another network.
He's doing these movies as a love letter to his fans, the fans of all of his all of the stuff over on the Smodco network. If you listen to the shows, you're going to get all the in jokes. And this one, Moose Jaws, it's the bookend of the trilogy. It's Jaws with a moose. That's all you need to be saying about it. And filming started. I'm excited. Apparently, you guys aren't, and I apologize. But
no, I'm gonna go see. Was it yoga yeah. posers? Yoga hosers.
Yep, yoga hosers.
Yeah, I'll go see it.
What the fuck are you guys talking about? I haven't even heard of this steaming pilot. I mean, because Tusk.
Hey,
did
it doesn't
so
matter.
Well.
Tusk was the extension of Red State. He was shown he didn't need studios to do what he wanted. And now he's just straight doing what he wants. He'll come back. He'll come back and do some more studio flicks. He's got those in the pipe. But he's shown that he doesn't need the establishment to do what he wants and what he likes. And you got it. Right. At least you got to give the credit.
Yeah.
Give credit for
man.
That.
Make shitty movies.
People make shitty movies. I mean, the studio's behind them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not talking about Michael Bay today. I mean, we could dive deep into that. No, I see. I heard mixed things about Tusk, and I haven't seen it yet. I have heard literally nothing about Yoga Hosers, though now I am intrigued. I'm hoping there's yoga pants. Like,
well,
is that a thing?
There may be, but it's about like 13-year-old girls. So you need to temper your expectations a little bit.
his daughter and Johnny Depp's daughter star in it, and they're essentially clerks. They're teenage girl clerks in Canada. So Tusk was good, but you have to be... You kind of got to be ready for it. Kevin's very pot heavy nowadays, and he doesn't exactly complete thoughts on the podcast. And that's what I got out of Tusk the most is if you listen to the podcast post Kevin really going to pot town, it's edited the same way. I would almost like to see the movie re-edited by a sober Kevin Smith and see how drastically different the movie is, because the cutaways and the jump edits are like listening to him on the podcast. Wow. It's like thoughts aren't finished, but I like the movie. It was good, and there's some stuff in it.
So, Chris, tell us more about this Moose Jaws project.
It started filming. That was it. So,
but what the is it
with
about?
A moose? What more do you need to know?
You got to listen to the podcast, like, Paul, evidently, to know anything about the movie.
Dude, I record podcasts. Right. I don't have time to listen to podcasts anymore.
If nothing else, it is the cinematic return of Jay and Silent Bob. And I believe it's the cinematic deaths of at least one of them as well.
Ooh, now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, and so I believe one of them goes down Quinn style, but, you know, to the moose, not to the shark. So I don't know what else I could say to you guys to make this seem like something you want to see.
I'm sold. I'll take my money. I'm sold.
If I get to see Kevin Smith or Jay mounted by a giant prosthetic moose, and that is their death scene, I think I'm in. I mean, I don't know how I'll respond to it in the moment.
Maybe you'll cry like a Kevin Smith watching the Flash.
Maybe I'll be so moved. All right. So what else do we have to talk about today? We have an exclusive deal from Comic Book Resources here. Jeff Johns details Rebirth plan, seeks to restore legacy to DC Universe. Didn't we already talk about this?
The video from Jeff Johns is just within the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. So we talked about Rebirth, but now this is Jeff Johns going on the record about it.
Okay, so I haven't seen this video, Chris. So fill us in here, though. Right. Like, tell me what's going on.
Jeff Johns came out and trying to assuage people's concerns that it is just going to be another reboot. And Jeff Johns made a very strong point saying, when have I, Jeff Johns, ever done a reboot? He doesn't do hard reboots. He takes characters that are in continuity and he brings back things that are missing. So that's what his envisioning of Rebirth is. And that's why he's the one doing the 80-page one-shot. He's going to take the current DC universe and he's going to add things to it that have been missing. So he's going to bring back some things. Along with that,
so like,
yes, exactly, and some of those legacy storylines and character arcs that have been missing, that have really, as I said on the last show, really alienated the longtime fans. They did a lot to try and get new fans in, but they alienated a lot of the longtime fans. So yeah.
what's your response to this, Travis? Because you weren't here last week when we waxed ecstatic on this topic.
You know, I think me and Chris had a short conversation about it on Facebook. I you know, as long as it's not the new 52 again, that was terrible. Other than the Batman title that came out of that, nothing was really good. I'm loving the Justice League and the Darkseid War right now. And I think maybe this reboot may come out of what finalizes that storyline. But like Chris said, they did a lot of things to get new readers to initially buy, but they didn't do anything long lasting to keep people returning. I mean, out of my pull list, I have Deathstroke, Midnighter, and Batman. Those are the only titles that I get each week from DC and Justice League when the Darkseid War storyline started. So I love Jeff Johns, and he is a pimp when it comes to stories and creating great story arcs. So I'm excited. I love the DC universe. I'm a Marvel guy, but I love the DC universe. So I'm very excited for it.
All right. So that's a shining recommendation and a promise of some PIMP activity here from the Blazing Defender. I'm going to take your, both of you gentlemen are a little more versed in DC than I am. And by a little, I mean a whole boatload. I have largely been unimpressed by DC's offerings in, you know, the recent years. I've flipped through a few books here and there and just
Have you read the Jeff Johns stuff? Have you read Flash Rebirth and Green Lantern Rebirth?
No, I have not. So, yes, so what you're saying is
those,
I need to.
I cannot recommend those any higher.
Right. To be honest, the Green Lantern Rebirth and the Sinestro Wars saga, that made me like, Green Lantern, I gave two shits about Green Lantern my entire life. Reading those storylines, I was like, holy shit, I'm in with both feet. This is amazing. I love the Sinestro Wars. Made me a big Jeff Johns fan. So just reading those, I think Chris is right. You're gonna feel real confident with Johns taking over this reboot.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, that's some good news. See, I mean, we talked last week a bit about how this could go really poorly and it could amount to largely nothing. But now that it sounds like we got somebody who's qualified at the helm, that's a good thing, because that is something that DC definitely needs to do.
Here's a quote from the article that I think it really, and it kind of ties into the Kevin Smith True North trilogy thing, is it's about these love letters to fans. So the question is, this definitely sounds targeted at more long-term fans, more lapsed fans. How about newer, more casual readers? And Geoff Johns responds, if you look at Green Lantern Rebirth or The Flash Rebirth, absolutely it's targeted to fans who read a lot of comics, who have as many comics as me. But at the same time, people can pick it up, and there's enough in Green Lantern Rebirth for someone to pick it up who has never read Green Lantern and understand what's happening. With DC Universe Rebirth, it's the same thing. If you have, like me, long boxes of DC comics, you'll be very happy. If you've never read a DC comic before, you won't be too lost. This is definitely for comic book readers more than it is for casual readers, just like Green Lantern Rebirth, but that doesn't mean it's exclusive to them. And what that's going back to is all the little tidbits that, if you know the history of those characters, you're going to get little tidbits and little callbacks. And when this dude does callbacks, they're deep pulls. It's not surface stuff. But he does them in a way that he brings them to the forefront, and you're just like, why hasn't this character, and he reimagines characters and does stuff with them, and you're like, why hasn't this been the storyline for the last 20 years? Because you just made a Z-list character epic.
What brings to my mind right now, just you saying what you just did, Chris, is I think about the Deadpool movie and Tim Miller. Tim Miller, the director, he was a huge Deadpool fan. He loved the character. And what he did was he created a character that, if you didn't know anything about Deadpool, you went to that movie and you absolutely loved it. It was entertaining. It was fun. It was badass. Had a great love story, I thought, personally. But the people that did know Deadpool, all the little things, the fourth wall breaking, the banter between him and Colossus. I mean, those things, being a fan of Deadpool, you walked out of that movie just, I mean, you were so satisfied. And Geoff Johns does the same thing. He can create something that you may not know anything about, or he can take something that has long canon and long history, and he can pull from that, make those people happy, and make new viewers happy as well. So if it wasn't for Geoff Johns being involved in this, I'd be just as skeptical as you, Paul.
All right, well, consider me interest peaked status. We'll see what comes of it. I mean, what I'm looking forward to here is, as somebody who's not a DC Comics fan generally, I mean, I don't dislike DC, but I just don't give it the time that I give Marvel. I'm looking for a good entry point, and this sounds like this could be that entry point, which is exciting. I think this is a great time for the comics to have a good entry point because of how strong DC's presence on television is right now. I mean, we've talked about this at length on previous shows. I still stand by the fact and the belief that DC has the best comic shows on TV right now. They are absolutely crushing it on multiple fronts, of coming from different styles and feeding different interests and needs of the fan base in a way that Marvel just isn't. I mean, Marvel is crushing films, like we know that. They're doing an amazing job there, but the TV shows just aren't, Daredevil and Jessica Jones are fantastic, but that's not your general audience type stuff. That's, you know, people have to seek that out. They're not going to just bump into it like they can the DC stuff that's out there right now. So I think this is a great time to transition a lot of folks into really getting in to the comics and getting into the stories, especially when we're talking about Justice League starting filming soon, or has already, you know, these things aren't necessarily all tied together because they're going to be three separate worlds, but that's the beauty of it, is you get people hooked on a character.
And not to help you wheel the soapbox out, but now, Paul, wouldn't you agree, would be the perfect point to get your digital subscription-based service up and running?
Oh, yeah, that would be fantastic. DC, if you're listening, I mean, get on that. Get on it. All right, so let's move on here and talk about our next little thing here. Speaking of Daredevil and Jessica Jones and, of course, Luke Cage, that will be coming soon. Apparently, we have some rumors about
casting.
And Paul,
you better stop right there. You got to stop, because someone's going to flip his lid if we go any further. just back up off his thing and let the man work.
Step up to the plate and smash
his home. We were talking about this before the show, because he had this when I was like, back up, motherfucker. This shit's mine. I've been waiting for this. when Charles asked me to be on, I was like, this, I mean, this happened today, apparently. So I was like, oh, I got my my topic I want to talk about. But Finn Jones has been the Game of Thrones star, Finn Jones, Loras Tyrell, I believe was his character. He is cast as Marvel's Iron Fist.
Yay!
Now, I say that kind of half-heartedly. I think he's great on Game of Thrones, but when I'm just glad he's finally cast. I've been waiting for this for a long time. I know they've kind of had some problems with the screenwriting and where to actually introduce Iron Fist in because of the whole mystical element. So I know that's they kind of put him on a back burner because of that. But I'm just glad they finally cast somebody. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but you know, I'm glad he's cast, but I'm just not sure if I love it or not. What do you think?
Okay, here's my take on it. He was good on Game of Thrones. You know, I don't know. I haven't watched the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones yet because, I mean, I read the books and then they got past the books and I was like, well, whatever. I'll get to it at some point. But, like, he was good. I don't know that he necessarily stood out to me, but he definitely wasn't bad. He seemed pretty emotive, which is something that I look for, is somebody that can express a wide, you know, range of emotions and everything. Which is really going to be really interesting with Danny because, you know, he's such a strange character. Yes. You know what I mean? So you really have to be able to carry that weight. Like there's a lot of gravitas to the character that has to be handled well, adeptly, you know? So I'm also excited to see that we're talking about casting here because this means that we're moving forward. I definitely want to see this show come to light. I definitely want to see this character appearing in the MCU. I want to see him appearing in the shows. I want to see him popping into the films at some point. Because unlike Daredevil or Jessica Jones, Iron Fist belongs in Avengers films. Iron Fist can just kind of jump in and start really having some impact, you know? He doesn't have to be, you know, one of the mains, you know what I mean? He doesn't have to carry the film per se. But they could definitely do a lot with him, especially going forward. So I'm really excited to see what happens with this. I'm really excited at, you know, in the way that Daredevil and Jessica Jones deal with, like, Hell's Kitchen and the gritty street-level aspect, you know, and Luke Cage will do so as well. Iron Fist can kind of transcend that a little bit and deal with the more mystical side of the setting. And then we've got Strange coming, you know, and I'm hyped for that, man. I'm really hyped to see what we do there. So we can see these worlds collide and we can definitely see like some really cool stuff happening. Because, I mean, what's not to like about Iron Fist? I mean, he's kung fu and magic. Like,
and he's rich.
Hell
and
yeah.
He's a billionaire.
Batman.
We're this one percenter talk. Where's the hero for the people?
Yeah. Well, we've got a few of those, and they're shitty people.
And I'll tell you what. In regards to the casting, you know, Charlie Cox was great on Boardwalk Empire, but I didn't know whether or not he'd be able to pull off Daredevil.
Right.
Be able to pull off Jessica Jones.
And now I couldn't imagine anybody else.
Right.
Yeah. I'll tell you. Out of all the casting, the only two that I've been super excited about, because I'm like, without even having to see them, see a frame of film, I knew that John Bernthal would make an awesome Punisher.
Right.
And Kingpin. I'm blanking on his name. Vincent D'Onofrio. Yeah.
Vincent, right.
But everybody else were unknown factors in it, and everybody has exceeded expectations. So.
Well, Marvel kills casting. Right. I mean, that's one of their secret ingredients that they use for everything they do, even though something may not be right in the story or whatever, what have you, that casting is always amazing. So trust me, I'm a little lukewarm about it, but all my faith is in Marvel as far as their casting goes. So I think it'll be great.
I definitely agree. I mean, I think Marvel has proven that having good casting directors and finding that hidden talent out there, you can really polish some things up and get some crazy results. Cause I'm with Chris here. Like, Charlie Cox was a nobody until that first season, you know, and now it's like I couldn't imagine anybody else playing that role. I couldn't imagine anybody else like really carrying that character in the same way. I couldn't imagine anybody else having that relationship with what's his
Foggy.
Name there
with Foggy.
I can't remember the actor's name. Yeah, but you know what I mean. So like he's another example. I mean, that kid did like dick and fart joke films for a while. And then he appears in a major Marvel project, and I'm like, wow, okay, I'm game. Let's see how it plays out. So yeah, no, I'm definitely excited to see what comes of this. This is relatively early, but Marvel moves fast, man. They say something's happening, and then the next thing you know, it's out. You know what I mean? So I think this probably looks like we could see about a year from now, I would guess. We'd probably see the show actually.
That's probably about right. Yeah,
I mean, I would say probably definitely first or second quarter next year. Maybe a little bit later, just to stagger it so it's not with Daredevil, in case they're on the same timetable next year for Daredevil. The Netflix aspect of the MCU is about to get wacky and wild and is going to have a whole mess of potential. Not that it hasn't already, you know, far exceeded our expectations. So really, really excited to see where this goes.
All right. Okay, with Deadpool being so huge, and it really probably didn't surprise us, but I think it surprised Hollywood on how well it did. And now you've got the Batman Superman coming up in March. Big shoes to fill. It's like, I don't know what to compare it to, but like, I always felt sorry for, like, when I went to a comedy show and I seen like the guy that opened and he killed it. And then the guy that was like, everybody paid the money to see. And then you leave the show going, man, the dude that opened was better. You know what I mean? So I was reading, they're actually projecting 100 million to 140 million opening weekend for Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. So I was kind of curious on what you guys thought. I personally, I'm taking the over on that. I think it'll see 175 million easily opening weekend. But with Deadpool doing so well, I don't want, you know, the weekend to open, people go see it, and it's kind of a lukewarm response, and people go, it wasn't as good as Deadpool, and it drops off from there, which could be bad for the DCU going forward.
Well, then they should have come to the dance, is my opinion. They should have brought their A game. But
I agree.
My concern is that now everybody's getting, and we've already seen it because the news broke that the Batman versus Superman DVD, the director's cut, is going to be rated R. So they're already trying to make up for it in the reverse, and they don't need to make up for it. Not every character deserves a rated R comic book movie. Exactly. And now I think we're going to see the floodgates open. Everybody's like, oh, well, we can do a rated R comic book movie. Look what we can do. And they're going to have characters being more ultra violent or dropping F-bombs that they would never ever drop.
Right. Well, like Wolverine, right. I'm a huge Wolverine fan. And to me, there hasn't been a good Wolverine movie.
What? Oh, controversial opinion. The Wolverine was pretty damn good, man. You know, the one where he's in Japan, like snickety, 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 like he's stabbing mofos.
Oh, okay, that wait a minute. Let me make sure I got the right Wolverine movie, where he fights a huge, giant silver robot samurai, and he cuts his claws off.
Yeah, silver samurai.
Oh God, Paul, no.
Okay. In all fairness, as much as I enjoyed the Wolverine, the ending is easily the worst part of the whole film. And I think what ends up happening with the Wolverine is what happens to a lot of movies, is they spend all this time crafting a really good film with a good experience and everything. And then they're like, we got to finish this bitch.
We're over budget, over schedule. You know, we got to end it.
It's like how all of those kind of movies end. Like, that's how the Wolverine Origins film went. Is it was like, this is okay. You know, this isn't great, but it's not terrible. And then Deadpool appears with his mouth sewn shut, and you're like, what the f- planet are we on? Like, this is, what is going on? How did we arrive at this point? How did the merc with a mouth get a stitch job? Like, what is... And similarly, I see it in the Michael Bay stuff, like the Transformers movies, where you're like, oh, we're going to spend, you know, 60% of this film building up all the story, and like everything's really cool and nuanced, and we're self-referencing, and this is great. And then crazy shaky cam action scene for like 25 to 45 minutes. And then real quick conclusion, movie's over. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
What? All this foreplay and then two pumps and you're done?
Now, I will agree with you on the beginning of the Wolverine. Both of them, actually. The beginning of Origins I thought was great. The beginning of the Wolverine I thought was really good. And then the end, it just really kind of ruined the movie. I love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I mean, I don't know who they're going to get next, but he's going to have big shoes to fill, because Hugh Jackman makes those movies for me. Chris, you're the tiebreaker here.
You know,
good movies or bad movies?
The Wolverine I thought was good. The ending had its flaws, but you know, we also look at that through the lens of we just got Wolverine Origins. So,
right, I mean,
it could have been Hugh Jackman literally opening a box of dog shit and going, this stinks. And we would have been like, oh, that movie was awesome.
You're right.
But I'll tell you, for violence, yes, I think Wolverine can and should have a rated R. Just give me Weapon X. Show me what happened in that lab. Yes. Give me the origins of Wolverine and I'll be happy. I'm good with Old Man Wolverine too. And that's the direction they're going to go. But Wolverine's one of those characters that can pull off a rated R movie. He's not
right.
He's not the one that the studios are going to try and force now.
Here's the thing. Like, okay, who is Wolverine as a character? What are his powers? He is has basically an indestructible skeleton and a body that regenerates virtually any damage that's done to it. And he has claws, all right? You know, he has claws that spring out of his hands and he can cut things. And you're going to try to jam that into anything less than an R? You're talking about somebody that you could, like, I mean, that's what Deadpool really exemplified was, like, you can take this character and do almost anything to them. And, you know, everybody understands that they're going to regenerate from it. You know, it's not a big deal. And so you can do brutal stuff, you know, and it can still mean something because we know that the character, well, in Wolverine's case, he feels pain. Whereas in Deadpool, you know, he's crazy. Right. So who knows what he actually feels.
But how cool is that? I mean, that looks so cool seeing something regenerate. Or when Wolverine gets shot and the bullets like just kind of pop back out of him. I mean, I love that. I think it looks awesome.
Dude, I love seeing Wolverine lose his shit. Berserker and just rage. Start, you know, snickety, snickety, snick.
X2, like, when they came into the mansion, like that, to me, that is the most perfect example of Wolverine in the movies ever.
Oh, my God, Chris, you're exactly right. And when I was sitting there saying the Wolverine movie sucked, that whole time I had that image of X2 in my head where he stabs the guy into the refrigerator and he lets out that primal scream. Oh, my God. Yeah. It still gets me jacked up thinking about that moment. Give me an hour. Give me 2 hours of that, and you can take my money. You can have my firstborn.
That's one of the things that frustrated me about the way Sabretooth was handled, because we never got the real knockdown, drag him out between the two guys with the healing factor and the adamantium claws and the just carnage. You know, like we could have gotten if they had appeared together in an R film where they were just allowed to let loose. That could have been one of the most insane things we've ever seen on film, but it was not. It was always, you know, it was always the kid gloves version of that, you know, fight. And that's frustrating because there was so much potential there. I mean, that is the classic rivalry that is just allows for so much. The other thing that I'm really sad that we never really got was a good fastball special. Come on, like find a way to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, like, Colossus wasn't the right size. Like, the one that you didn't like is the right size.
Well, I'm fine with that. You know what, Chris?
Eat it. Yeah, I haven't listened to the review show yet. So you didn't like the CGI Colossus, Paul?
I didn't like the CGI for that Colossus. I liked the voice actor. I liked the way it was presented. I just didn't care for the actual CGI itself. I thought it looked a little out of place. But now what I did say is if we think about this from the perspective of this is Deadpool's movie and an exaggerated, more cartoony version, as I feel that Colossus is, makes total sense from Wade's perspective. You know, like it's very because I thought that the core X-Men films version of Colossus looked really slick, even for the time. He just didn't get enough screen time at the time. I just thought that like kind of shiny bright look it was hot, you know, it looked good, and it really got me jacked up. And I think it's the second film when he appears for the first time and he's just like, you see him like sheathed up there, badass. And then you know, almost nothing, right? It was badass, and that's what I want. Is like, you know, I wanted something like that. But yeah, no, I mean, it'll grow on me. I mean, it's not the end of the world. There are worse things that can happen, I mean, the big thing with the Deadpool movie is we know how quick this was turned around. I know just how much work goes into CG. You know, like I have some friends who, you know, have done CG work and stuff like that. And I know that, you know, the average, you know, you're talking about a couple frames. That usually is the culmination of dozens, if not hundreds of hours of work. So when you're pumping out a film in about a year's time and it has a tremendous amount of CG, which Deadpool does, not all of it's going to be top shelf work. You know what I mean? They're really patching it together and getting it out there. So yeah, there can be a lot forgiven. But yeah, I mean, the big thing is that size difference. You know, he's huge in Deadpool. Yeah. He's big, big boy. And he could totally, like, I'm really hoping, even though Jackman has said that he's only going to appear in the next Wolverine film, I really would like to see something with him in Deadpool. So my dream, we talked about, you know, the possibilities of what's going to happen with the X-Force film. I would love to see Wolverine in the X-Force film, if only for like the culmination at the end. I want to see him in the the black and gray. You know what I mean? I really want to see that at least once. So I hope maybe if we don't get it out of Jackman, maybe we get it out of whoever assumes the mantle. That would be incredible, because I'd be super hyped up for that. There's a lot of foundation here for an amazing X-Force movie. You know, there's a lot of potential here. We have a lot of the core characters already. You know, I mean, we finally got Olivia Munn as Psylocke, depending on how this film goes. You know, I mean, we could really, really do some cool stuff. So
yeah, possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you,
absolutely.
I think, and I can't remember if we talked about this or if it was on another, if I heard it somewhere else, but I 100% agree with it. Whoever takes over for Wolverine, I don't want Dakin. I don't want son of Wolverine. Go ahead and give me X-23 on the big screen. Because the character's got the chops. You just need somebody that cares about the property and will translate it properly.
See, that might be the play. It might be time to pass the mantle and not try to go with another, you know, male character and just kind of let X-23 assume the mantle, if you will. Especially because now we're seeing her in the comic book. She has an X-Men costume that it has the Wolverine, you know what I mean? Which is really cool. Yeah, I'm for it, man. Like, I think that maybe if in this next Wolverine film they set her up and then, you know, we ride out into the sunset with her instead of Jackman.
Especially that would be with DC fantastic. Coming out with Wonder Woman. Marvel can, you know, Fox Studios can be like, yeah, Wonder Woman's nice. Guess what? We got Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah, right? And there's a lot of depth in that character that I really like. You know, the whole... The fact that she's a clone that basically doesn't have all the development that somebody, you know, of that physical maturity should have, you know, all the mental and emotional development, everything that she has to learn still. There's a lot of room there to do some interesting stories. And there's a big push in our society right now, particularly in nerd circles, to see strong female representation. And she's a great character for that. I mean, she's primal. She's savage. She's, you know. She's a story about someone who has to learn to contain their animal nature because it goes too far. You know what I mean? So, I mean, when you look at recent films that have really gotten called out for showing strong female characters, there's still a little bit of criticism that maybe they're too strong or whatever. Well, this is going to be a character that has the potential to just be like so over the edge in their ferocity that it's part of what's going to show her strength is her being able to rein that in. And, you know, try to be a functioning member of a team and a functioning member of, you know, being on the right side of the whole morality of being a superpowered creature.
Definitely. And I think the benefit of that character, similar to the benefit of Wonder Woman, is you can have those characters get the living knocked out of them in a movie. And you're not going to have people crying foul. You can't do that to a female in a movie. You can't promote violence against females because those two are going to take the beating and then they're going to turn around and give it back just as good. Right. And so then you can almost just avoid the Mary Sue arguments of those characters because they're going to they're going to go toe to toe with whoever is in their face.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's one of the issues that a few people have had with Black Widow is sometimes she takes a bigger beating than she maybe should. But it's like, it's fine. Well, they can't say that with those characters. And I completely agree with that. I dig that sort of thing. Like, I dig character conflict where there's so many stories about like the person who is underpowered trying to aspire and grasp at power, or there's the story of the person who just needs to, like, you know, try and then they become, you know, all that stuff. I want to see somebody who's powerful, who's capable right out of the gate, but has to learn to tone it down and refine it and really focus it up. That is something I'm interested in. That's a story that's not as common as all the other tropes. And I think there's a lot of potential there. There's a lot of potential there, even though I don't think X-23 is really your PG-13 type of character. I definitely think it's a hard R. There's still potential to teach some life lessons there too. I'm always big on that. Like, Growing up, I loved the films that taught me life lessons that also had amazing action. I mean, you know, one of the most classic movies for most people, especially, you know, of our generations here, Braveheart. You know, that's a movie that a lot of us grew up watching. That movie is not well known for having a ton of awesome action scenes and a lot of funny, like, jokes and all that kind of stuff. But there's a real strong moral story there, you know, of people standing by their convictions, standing up for the right things. I like to see that, you know, propagated throughout film. And I think X-23 is totally the character that you can do that kind of exploration with in a meaningful, fresh way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can fold in the X-Men and not have it put in that mentor role of Wolverine. You can get down on the equal footing and take go from their perspective 100%.
So. Especially with where we're building up to here with Apocalypse. I mean, we don't exactly know how that's all going to shake out, but they recast a lot of the roles. I mean, we've got a new Jean Grey, you know, we've got the new Storm. There's a lot of potential here, which is fantastic. So yeah, I mean, pass the mantle, man, you know, give us X-23. All right, guys, do we anybody have anything else you want to bring up before we wrap it up here?
that second Daredevil trailer, did you guys check it out?
Yes.
I have not seen it.
Oh, that's
it
some
yet.
Good stuff. There's no more doubts about Elektra in my mind. Not that I had any.
Nah, I never had any. But yeah. Yeah, I'm not Frank Miller.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Frank Miller's the only one that was kind of pissed off about it, I think. Yeah.
That lady sold it in ways that Jennifer Garner could never dream to.
So, Chris, you've seen it, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, there's a because I have a buddy that's a huge Daredevil fan, and we were going back and forth about this morning. And then there's a scene where there's a guy, and it looks like he has a hoodie on, and he takes his hood, his back's turned to the screen. He pulls his hood back, and right before he turns around, it cuts away. Did you notice that?
You're talking about when they're talking about the hand again, when the hand ninja.
I believe it was what they were talking about. Yeah,
I think it's close to the end of the.
I'm looking for it right.
Yeah, it's close to the end of the trailer, I believe.
I know, I'm looking for it. I can't find it though. I took some screen grabs of it, but it doesn't have the time on it. Yeah, I was curious. I'm trying to figure out who it is. I can't see if it's Nuke. I don't know who that is, but he's obviously somebody because, you know, like, of course they cut away.
Yeah, I can't tell. And my
seconds left in the trailer. There's 30 seconds exactly left in the trailer, and he goes to pull. And he's sitting beside something that looks like maybe it's a coffin or a sarcophagus or something, and it has some Japanese writing on it.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I was curious if you knew who you thought that might be.
We're recording this on Thursday, the 25th of February, so the trailer just hit today. If you haven't checked it out yet, go out there and look at it. I know I'm going to as soon as we finish up here. Yeah, I mean, the hype is real. Everybody's talking about it today.
Looks so good.
You get a couple pieces of Bernthal as Punisher again and Scott Glenn, which I can't tell. I can't tell if that's new footage. There's a shot of Scott Glenn. I can't tell if that was new footage, but his line in the preview in the trailer sounds like it's just recorded from season one.
Yeah, so, I see what you're saying now. Yeah, because I was so excited that Stick was back. Because Stick and Stone, that like from that Frank Miller run with Daredevil, are like to this day two of my favorite like supporting characters in Daredevil. I mean, I absolutely love them. I think they're badass. So I hope we see Stone this season. I mean, that's a definite possibility.
All right, guys, let's wrap this crazy train that we've been running here up. We're definitely going off of the rails on this show. So this is what happens when McFall nor Ibbot are available. chaos.
Organized chaos.
But, organized chaos. You know, I mean, we're breaking the panel. We're breaking the rules. We're breaking the format. You know, you name it. Of course, you can find Travis. Tell us where we can find
you. You can find me at theblazingdefenderreport.com, and you can find me at the Giant Size Team Up Network or giantsizeteamup.com as well.
Yeah, dude. You can find Chris Wisdom in my Facebook messenger spamming me with crap every day. No, I mean, We poke fun at Chris, but Chris always has his thumb to the pulse of interesting things, and he's always hitting us with all these little tidbits, and that's a lot of the stuff that contributes to the awesomeness that is Giant Size Team Up Network and Giant Sized Awesome Breaking the Panels, because I, you know, butchered that. In any case, that'll be it for this week, and we'll look forward to seeing you again. Once again, Giant Size Team Up Network.
We'll see you next week.
Breaking the panel. Thanks.